Hello and welcome to Women in Post, a podcast and web series for women in post-production by Women in Post-Production. Today on the show, we'll be speaking with Chloe.
So now the biggest thing for all filmmakers is like you just don't have the money to like fund all these films.
Chloe, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in film? You know, where did your interests start?
So I studied performing arts in college back in England, and I've always loved film. So my go-to was always acting. And it wasn't until I moved to America and met my husband, and he's all into like directing and all the crew stuff, that he taught me, you know, how to make films. So that was really exciting. And I that got me into actually filmmaking.
That's wow. So did you guys start dating like while you were working on a project together, or did you meet first and then start working together? How did that?
We met, and then we made our first short film together, which was a 24-hour film competition, which is like super stressful, but that was really exciting. It's a good way to test a relationship.
Nice. I've seen those. We had those out in let's see, there was one in Virginia. Ours was like a 48-hour, I think.
Okay.
And to me, it just sounded like a nightmare. Like, no, I don't want to do that. But yeah, I've thought about it a couple of times. How did it wind up for you guys, your film?
So the one we submitted was, you know, full of flaws and unfinished, 24 hours. Even 48 hours is like not enough time to produce like a good product. However, one of my producing partners, Wesley Malott, he has done it like he's done the 48-hour one a few years in a row, and his product always looks great. But I don't know how he did it, because I think it's like mad quick.
Nice.
But we actually have the final one on it's called How I Won the War on PGC Studios, and that was actually re-edited and then put online. But the one we submitted was much rougher. I don't think we would ever show that.
How did the idea for FilmCrypt come into play? Where did that start?
I was doing a short film with my husband, which was a horror film. And originally we had PGC Studios, which was his company. And then I was going to do everything under that when we were together. And I wanted to do something... like I wanted to add a horror company. Like there was no reason not to. It's like, oh, something like in case I ever do stuff where you don't want to be involved, or like it's not for PGC Studios, and I have my own little brand. So I just came up with FearCrypt on a whim, and I made this like super crap logo for it, like myself on Premiere Pro, which just, it was horrible. And I was like, oh, I'm going to use, it was called FearCrypt Productions. And it only later became just FearCrypt, because I thought that was just much cooler. But yeah, it was just something I made on a whim to brand all my stuff. And then I ended up making many more horror films. So it was cool to kind of create a brand to put them all under.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you intentionally focus on horror films? Or is that just kind of like the house that you have to put your horror films under?
Yes, it's mainly just the house for horror films, but if all my short films so far have been horror films, unless I'm collaborating with my husband, who is not as much of a fan of horror as I am. So he likes, you know, like the drama genre. And when we worked together, like we just did our first feature film, and it ended up being a psychological thriller, because it had those like dark elements that I really like, but also like a really good core story. And we own another production company together called Aspire Motion Pictures. So that's a much more uplifting home for films that aren't full horror.
Uh-huh. So what is it about horror that you really like?
So I've answered this question many times for people, because I remember for such a long time, like people would be like, so why do you like horror? Like that's such a, you know, awful thing to like, why do you like scary movies? But I think I was reading this article years ago, and I'm an adrenaline junkie myself. And I love like roller coasters and skydiving and all these things that get my adrenaline really high. And I've always loved horror films, but I don't really know why, because I don't like, it's not like you enjoy watching like gory stuff. It's more like the adrenaline you get from being frightened. Mm-hmm. is like this weird, like it's an experience. So like when I watch like a drama film, it's like, oh, you're invested in the story and it's really cool. But if I watch a horror film like with friends and you're on the edge of your seat and you're like, oh my God, how's this going to turn out? Like it's more like an experience and it's more exciting. And I just have always loved that rush where you're like, oh my God, who's going to win this? Is the serial killer going to get them? Or like all this scary stuff, I guess. But I'm actually, you know, like if I go to haunted houses in real life, I'm like so frightened. I'll be the one screaming and not so much a big fan of it in those environments, but film you can control a lot. So
would you say that you enjoy watching horror films more like when you're with a group of friends versus like when you're by yourself?
It's such a different experience. I prefer watching it with friends because they're normally more frightened than me, I think, because as soon as you get into filmmaking, you know all the tricks. It's very hard for me to like really be totally immersed in a film because like you know how they're made and you know all the tricks you do and like the editing and to make jump scares happen and SFX. Well,
maybe what are some of the, I don't want you to give away all of your tricks, but if somebody is sitting here thinking, okay, honestly, I'm thinking, what are the laws to jump scare? Like what things do you use most often? What are the rules that, you know, orient your horror playbook?
Well, I feel like one of the main like things that people do now is like false jump scares first. So it'll be like, oh, this is going to be the jump scare, and you'll get all intense for it and you'll be ready to be frightened, and then it like ends up being like nothing and you'll fade it out with the music and you're like, oh, everything's fine. And then like right after, you'll be like, oh, something will pop out. I don't know about trips at I just like them in general. I know some people think they're like really tropey for horror movies, but I like to be like super scared.
What is like one horror movie that has informed, I guess, your style?
I think it's very clever when stories, you can't escape a story in your real life. So like Nightmare on Elm Street, I think is absolute gold because they did that whole story around happening in your sleep and everyone has to sleep. Like you can't avoid sleeping. Like I remember when I was younger, I watched a movie called What Lies Beneath. This is not probably classified as a full horror, but there's like a spoiler alert here. There's like a scene where she looks in the bathtub and it's so quick and she sees like the ghost in the reflection. And I just didn't want to take a bath for like months. I was like, I only want to get a shower because if I'll see some kind of like ghost or like, so things that like can trigger you to think about a movie in your normal daily life, I think is very clever for horror writers and filmmakers to do. And Wes Craven.
I wonder if people who produce this and people who can watch this as consumers are more prone to believe in ghosts, like to actually believe in possessions and believe that like this stuff can happen in the real world. But do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know, because I'm so mixed on it where like I don't think I do, but like I'm sure if something happened to me, I'd be a believer pretty quick. But I think it's because when you're a filmmaker, you manufacture them scares so much that to think about it in real life. And I know that you could tell someone who is just in general like not a horror person and they don't like talk about that often, if you were like, oh, there's a ghost here or something, you can see how quickly they could believe something like that. You're like, oh, I don't know if like most of these things are rumors or they're real, but I sure don't want to find out.
So with Fear Crypt, what are some of the challenges that you experienced in setting up the brand, and where are you bringing it to?
So right now it was pretty much something that I made on a whim when I did my first short, but I've just used it constantly with all my films, and then I got it under an LLC. And I eventually want it to be like, I'll mirror the same business model as like Crypt TV and Alta, where they have all these different shorts and you can literally just go on their YouTube and you can watch as many as you want in all these different subgenres. I don't have enough projects right now to like have that much product on my site, but eventually hopefully that I can follow the similar model where like if you just want to watch 10 minutes of a film then you can. That's what I would love it to be.
Is that what there's been a lot of commercials on right now for this thing called Quibi?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. I think that's so cool. I think more so now it's hard for me. Like I'm rubbish because like sitting through a feature film is already hard for me. Like I'm very, don't have like massive concentration. So when I watch all these short horror films, I love it because I can sit for 10 minutes and enjoy a film. So I think that's a really good business model and I think it'll do really well because sometimes you just want to watch 10 minutes. Or I watch like films in 10 minute sections. Directors will hate me for saying that because that's not how you're supposed to watch it. but I think people with the low attention span love shorts like me.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes more sense. I'm thinking like, because I'm the opposite. Like I could sit there and watch something forever. I was gonna binge watched Heroes last night for like 3 hours. But I had to finish the season. So the business model for that then would be what, marketing, like advertising dollars?
I mean, right now I have like 100 subscribers, so it's absolutely rubbish. I have no experience in marketing my stuff, and I only have like 10 short films on there right now. I'm hoping that as I have more shorts on there, then I can hopefully get more subscribers. And then you can monetize and then I can afford someone to do like press and marketing because I just have no experience in that. That's something I have to eventually do and all business models do have to do. It's just all about the dollars. So if you have none, it's all about what you can do until you can get them.
Yeah. So the people that are in your production house, then you have obviously a camera crew of some kind and a post-production crew, right? What does that look like?
So all of the people I work with, I hire are on my short films. I normally, like if you watch any of my shorts, there's normally like 4 producers on, which is sometimes excessive for a 3-minute short. But I found that when I was starting out, the biggest thing for all filmmakers is like you just don't have the money to like fund all these films. And I was like so depressed because I was like, oh, I've got all these scripts and ideas that I want to do. But, you know, it'll take me years to like save up all the money to do them. And then I started finding people who were in the same, like the same place as me. And one of the guys I collaborate with a lot, he's called Wesley Malott. His YouTube's called Thinking Art Entertainment, and he's much further along with me, has more subscribers, and he is in the same boat where he's like, you know, I want to make all this stuff, but it's all about like financials. And we teamed up and we just split everything on our shorts and then with the multiple producers. And he also is a DP and he has all his own equipment. I have equipment. And then you have the other producers too, who all bring something big to the team or they're the big players. So they do one of the major like crew positions too. And before you know it, like you have a crew and you didn't spend loads of money. The only money is for the people who aren't producing and it's not their product. That's who you pay, but the big players like the DP, they're producing. So he wanted to create stuff for his YouTube channel. So at the end we all put in like the money we needed, and we already had all the equipment, so we're not renting cameras or we're not renting lights. Like we'll hire a gaffer. The gaffer we always work with, he has his own lighting equipment, he's always game, and he's friends with Wes. And yeah, and it ends up just being almost like you're like a friendship group, but you're also making all the stuff, and combined you have enough equipment to make a film. So it ended up being this like neat little model that I've used over and over again and been able to create product where it's on all of our YouTube channels. So yeah, it's kind of like diluted on YouTube, but people who follow Thinking Art don't necessarily follow Fear Crypt. And, you know, so it's, you're just getting the film out there and you're making these shorts to get better as a filmmaker and get the word out about your channel and who you are as a filmmaker.
Yeah, for sure. But sometimes it feels kind of weird to like to have a video in three different places, or yeah, like however many, because you want to put it on your YouTube channel, and then the person that you make it for wants to put it on their website, and then the person who was like the DP wants to put it on Vimeo, and like, it feels strange. But I think it's important for people to realize that that's okay. Like, lots of people are doing it.
Yeah, it's not great for YouTube algorithms, I'll say that, because you're putting the same thing on, and it's better to just direct it all to one place. But the way that we work right now is it has to be fair for everyone involved and everyone who put the work in. It doesn't bother me right now. I mean, if I fully funded it and it was all my idea and everything, then yes, then you can have the sole ownership. But if there's multiple owners, you should be able to do what you want with it. It doesn't bother me. It's all just advertising. It's like, well, it's always what's best for the film and not the company. Mm-hmm. And getting the best product out there. And the more people who share it, the more people will see it. So it doesn't bother me too much.
Where were you able to find collaborators to start building this?
I actually just put out a post on Facebook. Like, Facebook's been like the best for me. I don't know how many people can say the same, probably most people who don't want to admit it, but you just find people who are like-minded or have YouTube channels and live close. My main producing partner, she's like my right-hand girl now, Brittany Sneeman, we met on a short film called Slash, and I can't remember, I had a post out for a crew member, and she saw it on film.org, which is awesome for people in Philadelphia, because that's where you can post all your cast and crew ads and stuff. And she's like, hey, you know, like, I'm not this crew member, but I'm trying to get into special effects, and I would love to just like shadow you guys on set and see how it all works. And she came on set, and she was like just super enthusiastic about filmmaking, and she did all these like amazing SFX. I don't think she did SFX on that one film, but she was like showing me all her work and everything. And then we just kept collaborating, and then she's interested in producing. And now we do all our films together. She does all the special effects on them. Like, she is like the same as if she went to film school. Like, she knows what she's doing, and I don't think I would work on a project without her. So I think sometimes you just meet these people who are like absolutely massive influences in your life. And we've even talked, her company's called End Eternal, and we've, because we do everything together now, we were like, well, maybe we should just have a logo that combines into like Fear Eternal or Eternal Fear. So the logos merge on the ones that we work together on. So,
oh, that's a neat idea.
About that. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, what if we take a minute to look at a clip of some of your guys' work?
Cool.
And yeah, no, you just raise that box there. Yeah, I know that feels awkward.
What did she say?
Down a little bit.
It was going to go in her face.
There. Yeah, that's perfect. Let's turn it. So.
And this is you here, right? The one that was talking?
Yes, I directed this one. So this is just some quick cuts of the BTS from that shot, which is on our YouTube channel too.
Okay. I love the part where you guys use the hairdryer to make that.
Yeah. That was so funny.
She's sitting there and I'm so surprised. Like, of course, it's such, it's just
and
so clever.
You, Ireland, then you can be like, okay, just run off. Awesome. Perfect.
Thank She's you. So cute. Is it hard to work with kids?
Not Ireland. Ireland was great. I mean, sometimes it can be hard because it depends on how young they are, but Ireland's like super professional. Like, she was the kid in the TV show Maniac. She was Emma Stone's and Jonah Hill's daughter in that. So she's like used to all the big sets. I worked with her a few years ago on a commercial that our company did. Not Faircrypt, but PGC Studios, and she was great. And then when I was doing this, I was like, oh my God, I would love it if Ireland could be in this. And her mom and Ireland were like super excited to do like this horror film, a satire, I guess it ended up being.
Does she live in Philly too?
Yeah. Either Philly or New Jersey, I can't remember, but she's pretty close.
Okay. There's the hair dryer. Did somebody just have that idea to use that, or was it, does everybody know to use hair dryer?
I think we decided that in pre-pro, just something that would be like super overdramatic and make all the hair go up. Like there was like a spirit coming out of the box and possessing her. Like I don't know if you've seen the film. It's pretty campy, but I just wanted it to be kind of a little bit over the top. I really like campy horror too. I find myself doing that much more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Action. I'm not your fucking beach housewife now!
Yes, she's scary. Did you write that one yourself?
I did. It was funny. I was actually just brainstorming stuff I wanted to do, and I don't know why, but I was like, what if just in a normal situation, someone just had a complete meltdown? And then I imagined this woman just going from being totally normal to just like smacking her head off the oven like a crazy person. And then I wrote the whole film around that. So sometimes I'll just have like a wild thought and then I'll be like, that's like a super interesting scene. And then I'll just write a short around it. Normally for the models I do, because I want to do it as cheap as possible, I'll only shoot for one day. So it'll be like 3 pages, 5 max, but I always... whoever's directing always, you know, adds to the script and stuff. And I'm like, oh, not over 5 pages, because then you have to rush the shots and I still want like a good product. So I normally do like 3 pages, which is like The Housewife. It's so short. But it's funny, Wesley, when he directs and he edits the scripts, he always like pushes all the action into like one paragraph. And I'm like, can we space that out? Because I see what you're doing here, trying to get it into 3 pages.
Some other of the videos that you have up right now are the tick one, and oh my gosh, I can't stop thinking about that because I hate ticks and like Lyme disease, and they're talking about Lyme disease and they're like, no, that's real horror for me. So Maria, what was your inspiration for that, and what was it like putting that one together?
So ticks, I did like the short script for a while ago, and then we were looking for something I wanted to do, and then I was brainstorming stuff with Brittany, and she was all into it, and she's like, oh, we can make this like super gory, and she actually, she built a 3D model tick, and so she's actually in this scene where like you see the big tick, she made it with like coat hangers, and she's off screen doing this with this little tick puppet. It's so fun. I have the BTS for ticks. I am gonna put it up in the next few days, so you'll be able to see her like puppeteering it from outside. So and then like the gross like bite wound afterwards. So she's like really into special effects. So anytime I'm like, this is gonna be a really gory one, she's like super into it, and she's like, well, let's do it. Let's try and make it as least VFX-y as possible. And then we did, right after that, we did Nefarious, and Brian Schwenk, he does all our VFX now. They kind of teamed up, Brittany and him, so they could do like a physical model and see what they could add to it with VFX. Most of the physical things are SFX, and then like any of the really out there stuff is VFX. But yeah, so that again, that was just like it'd be really cool if the tick came out you like an alien, and then made a whole film from it.
You know, I had a tick on me once, and it was not fun. I don't even know how I found it. It was like I was getting ready for bed after I was doing some video editing downstairs, and I just like went like this, and sitting right on the back of my neck, right like under my hair. Oh my God. And it was like, oh my gosh, I gotta move. Gotta get out of here.
I've never had a tick on me, so it's just a personal fear of just having it.
Yeah.
But, I hate insects too. Like they both fascinate me and gross me out. Like I hate house centipedes. Like we just don't have them in England. And then like when I saw one here, and like, and most Americans are just like, oh, it's a house centipede. And I'm like, oh my God, like if I find one of them in my bedroom or something, I'd be mortified.
Are they the really big ones?
Yeah, with like the million legs. I call them like million leggers, and they crawl, like anything that crawls really fast. So I'll have to do something I'd love to do like a feature film with insects and stuff, because so many people are frightened of spiders and creepy crawlies, and they're probably harmless. It's just because they come at you really quick with like trillions of legs, and you're like, oh, and you panic. And
they're so small, they can get in anywhere. Like,
I know,
crawl in your ear, they crawl up your nose. God forbid they crawl anywhere else. Hate bugs. So when you're producing these clips that are on YouTube now, those shorts, what is your strategy for overseeing post-production?
So I'm a pretty hands-on producer, and I like to be involved in all of it. So whoever's directing has like will do most of the creative notes, and I will just have access to all of it, so I can also give my own opinion, as with all the producers, if they want to. Some producers don't want to be involved too much in post. They'd want to see it like when the final thing's done, but I like to see like every sound design, every color pass, so I can see like where it's heading, which is pretty quick on like a 3-minute shot, honestly. I think one of my main things as a producer is like I'm very organized, and I have like I'm the person with all the Excel sheets, and making sure like if we want to do like a festival run, which we haven't really been doing too much with our short films, but now we're starting to get into that. Like my most recent film, which should actually be done today. It's completely going to be done. The final export, it's called Alicia. And we put a little bit more money into this one, a little bit more time. We shot for multiple days. And like the main thing is to do a festival run with that one. So we have hard deadlines to make, for the festival deadlines, and like, oh, well, if we want to premiere here, like, let's try not hit the late deadline. So that's definitely more pressure, because you're like, how long does this take? And then, you know, people will be like, oh, it'll take me 2 weeks, but sometimes it's going to take them three, and you know it is. And obviously sometimes you work with people, it's the same as like doing homework. If you have 4 weeks, you'll do it on the last day. Unless you have like the producer being like, do you have a pass after 1 week? Yeah. So, that's a little bit more, hands-on, but for these, normally they're so low budget, that people are doing it in their own time. You know, they're not meeting hard deadlines for it. So it like gets done when it gets done, as long as it's not like a 2-year thing. But they normally get wrapped up pretty quick, 'cause they're so short. I know that like seeing the post-production on a feature film is just so much more work, and so much more legal, and just so much more paperwork. But the shorts are pretty low stress. Still stressful, but not compared to doing a feature film. My God.
And that's something that you do with your husband, the feature-length films?
Yeah, that's something we're trying to do, like, as a filmmaking career. The shorts right now I do on the side for fun. I'm trying to build something, but it's not something we're going to make too much money off. And it's hard to make money off an indie film, but at least a feature film you can try and sell. You can try and find a sales agent and a distributor. So, you know, that's a little, and there's normally more money involved. So you have to, you know, there's a lot more stress and a lot more things you have to do. But for the short films, they're kind of like what I do while I'm waiting to do the features, where I can improve myself in just in general being a filmmaker and an actor. So it's kind of like the fun, lower stress version. Not that any time you make a film is never not stressful.
Right. So do you find the festival that you're submitting it to on Film Freeway, or...?
Yeah, I have like a whole festival plan. So it's just, you know, whenever I show anyone else my festival plan, it's just color coded to madness on an Excel sheet. And it's only me who ever understands it. Or if I'm like, do you like this plan? That everyone's just like, yeah, that's great. I don't think I need to like, really. Looks like you got your plan down. But even like the festival circuit is expensive, and if you don't try to be strategic, you can just lose so much money by blind submitting. A lot of it is like where you have ins. But yeah, everyone learns that.
What an inn be like? You know somebody who's running the festival, or what is like a festival inn?
Just like, yeah, you know more people at the festival. You've been to the festival before. You're a past filmmaker there. Definitely helps, I think, if you have names in your film, especially if you're doing a feature film, it helps for the higher tier festivals. Yeah, it's feature films, it's much harder. Shorts, I feel like the good in for short film is like 3 minutes. If it's short, they can program three-minute films in the same space as one 10-minute film. So they, you know, festivals are businesses, and they run like businesses, and they've got to attract audiences. So yeah, that's something to think about too. But it's also hard, like, until you submit and try and get your work out there, you'll never know anyone, you know. So of course you want to blind submit, but it's also, it's scary. I judge for 5 film festivals now.
You judge for them?
Mm-hmm. I judge for the Atlanta Comedy Film Festival, the Women's Comedy Film Festival, Georgia Shorts, Summit in the South, Southern Horror Film Festival, and the Atlanta Women's Film Festival. So I just got into judging for a bunch of festivals, which is cool because I get to see the film submissions that are coming in and what type of films. And I find it really interesting. And then you also, you know, as soon as a film goes over 10 minutes, if it's not good, it's hard to program.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you go into certain time realms, you hinder your chances. And I didn't know any of that before. Like I started judging and talking to festival directors about what they look for. And it's a whole game, you know, that you have to understand. I feel before you start spending hundreds of dollars in the film festival circuit.
Yeah. So do you have to be like in person at the festival to do the judging? And how did you get your foot in the door to do that?
I just judge online. So I answered, I was looking to do it like I wanted to do it. And I think it was online. I think it might have been on Facebook actually. And they were looking for people to judge, and you could just send in like all your stats about like who you are. Are you a filmmaker and what have you done? And I just sent that all in. And I said, I'm like super interested in doing it. And they got back to me. And then I have a Film Freeway account where I judge right off Film Freeway, which I also thought was cool because I also get to see how they're judged. Huh. So like what they're judging on. So they're judging on pacing, cinematography. And I think that's also really helpful. I think knowing how the whole process goes as a filmmaker is just super helpful. Like, I mean, like my main thing is acting. So I know how it is to be in front of the camera. I know how it is to be behind the camera. And then I know how it is in post-production. And now I know how it gets rated when the product is done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something you have to be thinking about from the moment you start writing the script.
That's really, really interesting. So is there any kind of training, or is it just like use your gut instinct when it comes to rating films?
It's all opinion, really. So they'll have multiple judges judge the same film, and then they'll look at all the scores, and I guess the ones that come in over a certain amount or getting consistently high ratings are probably the ones they program. And then the ones that are getting consistently low ratings, I'm sure it's like a hierarchy. So they have like a bunch of people judge initially, and then the ones that pass through. I've never run a festival, so I have no idea like where it goes from where I am, but I find it super interesting. And I judged for like high school competitions and stuff. And then you see, so it's like you're judging on the category too. So if you know it's like a high school category, then you're going to be a lot more lenient with things. But mm-hmm. if you're judging a professional film, then you're going to be like, you're going to be judging it as you would, you know, normally. So I'm scared to go back and watch my films as a festival judge. not that I submit to the ones, I mean, like if I watched it pretending that it wasn't my film, how I would judge it would be scared. Like that's something I have to think about as a producer. Like,
yeah,
what do I think that these scores would come in for my own stuff? which is scary.
But so you're saying you can't submit to a festival that you're also judging for, is that right?
I don't know if you can, but I don't really think that's fair. Like, I don't agree with that, so I never would, because then, I mean, if I was doing it for Big One, like, I guess then I would email the director and be like, hey, don't give me my own film. I can't judge this, but I haven't so far. I don't think I would.
Okay. So there was one thing that you wrote about in your bio on your website, about escapism and how, like, horror is kind of escape. Want to talk about that at all, or do we just want to be like, maybe next?
Yeah, I loved films, like, not just horror as a kid, and I think because, like, you know, in general, like, life is, you know, life, it's not super exciting. It's not like when you watch Game of Thrones and there's dragons and all this. It's kind of just very standard, like, most people do their 9 to 5 and then they come home and they'll watch a film, and they watch a film because they want to experience someone else's story that isn't theirs. And yeah, that might be like a drama that's similar, so like some people's tastes lie there, but some people want to watch like Indiana Jones and watch like this hugely exciting action film. And for horror, for me, it's hopefully never be in any kind of situation like that, but it's like make-believe, like, it's not real, but it's like, oh my god, like, what's going on here? And it's gets your adrenaline going, because it's normally scary. Like, I've seen Chainsaw Massacre so many times, and every time, like, someone chases someone with a chainsaw, it's like, I feel my heart pumping. Like, I know the outcome, I've watched the film, but it's still terrifying, and I feel like I need to talk about it afterwards, you know, like, which is not normally something I do with, like, you know, other films. So yeah, it's just more of an experience, I guess. But that's all genres, I think.
Okay. Well, you know, if people want to check out some more of your work, where can they find your films? Where can they find your website?
So most of my social media hashtags and ads are at FearCrypt, and I have a website, www.fearcrypt.com, and a YouTube channel, which you should be able to find if you type in FearCrypt, which would be awesome. Thank you for supporting FearCrypt. I need to get my subscribers up, so I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been so much fun, you know, learning about what you're doing and horror films in general and a bunch of stuff. So thank you. Thank you
for having me.
Thanks for watching. I'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed this week's episode, give us a like, leave us a question or a comment, and share with your friends. Your viewership and support helps promote women working in film. Follow us on Instagram, subscribe to us on YouTube, and join our Patreon community. Interested in being a guest or sponsor on the show? Send me a message. I'd love to hear from you. See you next week on Women in Post.